Kent State, their name does something for people. When people hear that you're a Kent State grad, they're like, oh yeah, I have a lot of nurses like that. And they're good nurses. They want to hire you because you're from Kent State in their nursing program. They teach the art of nursing. They teach the therapeutic communication. They teach how to really care for the person and not just knowledge. Even when it's hard in classes, even when this is a new adjustment, the school itself has the people and the support that you need to be the best nurse that you can be.
Begin at Kent State University. And we're back with an all new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Lewis Fertel, and I would normally never admit this, but I actually am ready to relinquish summer, and I'll tell you why. I finally got word that an Oscar movie coming out soon is a masterpiece. I can't say who said it to me. I think it's embargoed. But the new Cate Blanchett movie, Tar, directed by Todd Field, who last did In the Bedroom and Little Children and no other movies, is apparently a banger. And also, I need to tell myself to stop saying the word banger because I saw Meghan McCain say it in a tweet, which means that is now dead and buried.
Banger. Rad.
No, rad is great. I keep being right about that.
I'm just trying to figure out what other words.
Grim used to be a thing I said all the time. I actually should be bringing that back.
Talk like you're writing for Spin in the 90s.
Yes. Read my new interview with Courtney Love.
you're ready for fall.
Yeah. I mean, I within reason. I mean, summer is where we all do our best work spiritually, I feel. But I'm
pumpkin
ready for
spice.
Oscar season. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Leaves. You're ready for the leaves. You're ready
being
for that
bundled
crunch.
Up. Turning off the air conditioning and walking outside. People are miserable.
You're ready
the
for
vibe
a crunch.
Of
crunch of leaves under your Steve Maddens.
No, I'm not ready for Evermore folklore season or whatever we're calling it now.
You're always excited for Oscar season, though.
Yes. No, if we just formally divided, you know, life into summer, Oscars, spring. That would be lovely.
Especially since I feel like this is the first real Oscar season.
Meaning what?
In a while. Since lockdown.
Since
the pandemic
yes.
started. This is the first year where movies are actually making money too. So
right. Maybe Top Gun Maverick will be in the, you know, special
Maverick
effects
is get-
world.
I think Top Gun Maverick is going to get an Oscar nomination.
Wait, for acting?
It may get a Best Picture nom.
I didn't like it that much.
They want people to... This is making like Titanic numbers. There's no way this movie is not getting nominated.
Well, I mean, it would be, yeah, the kind of Mad Max Fury Road of this year or something. But that movie, to me, was extremely innovative in addition to being entertaining. This is just good old-fashioned American entertainment.
It's Hollywood. It's Americana. Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and dissuade the Academy from going that direction. But
I'm launching a full-scale consider for Tom Cruise.
Wow. He needs the help. As you know, he has no machine of any kind behind him.
Listen, I did it as a barb for Nikki, who was number one on Billboard for Super Freaky Girl, which... honestly, I'm shocked. But the barbs were mobilizing. They were streaming, they were purchasing.
They're a uniform political unit. That we understand.
She was dropping more remixes and a cappella versions than Taylor Swift. And Taylor already will drop like 50 versions of a single.
Right. Also, it's the first, what is it, solo female rap number one in some...
Since Lauryn Hill's doo-wop That Thing.
Which is crazy. But then, wasn't Bodak Yellow a number one hit? What are we talking about?
It wasn't.
So the statistic is, it's the first female rap solo to debut at number one since Lauryn Hill. Which,
yes.
Wow, you'd think that would happen all the time. Cardi, Megan, what's going on there?
No, because Cardi and Megan's... Cardi and Megan's are like assisted... it's featuring someone else. So
pathetic.
This is the first solo, you know? And I think that there is, you know, a spiritual succession from doo-wop that thing to super freaky girl, you know? Because Nikki is like, you know what, Lauren? I am going to doo-wop that thing.
Yeah, I am the Jezebel of which
Okay. Culture's come
you know
so
you better
far
watch
since
98. Out. Yeah. The doo-wop that thing video, by the way, at one point we were watching that all the time. That remains one of the best videos ever. Just a perfect concept for a music video. And also like perfect marketing. Like, see how she's old school and the new thing you want to be a part of? Anyway, they really nailed it.
It is wildly a perfect song that I know I brought this up last week with This Is How We Do It, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doo-wop That Thing is a perfect song that you can throw on at any party. And, you know, the whites only side and the black side will go up.
Which
you
is
know,
how
across.
Your parties are organized. Yes.
Yes. I have, you know, I throw parties across segregation lines.
but the lines are there. Yes.
Yeah. The lines are there. It's just like the gym and Hairspray. Okay. Yeah. but both sides will go up. But I don't think doo-wop has really been reclaimed as a white song.
Correct. Yes. Though that said,
it's not Baby Got Back.
I do feel you will see a nervy type of white person sing all the lyrics to it to impress everybody. But I guess that's just how all rap is now.
I mean, like you when the jump off comes on.
Oh, please. Excuse me? Watch me make a Sprite can disappear in my mouth. I mean, I simply will do it.
All right. We have got a show. I'm sorry, but unfortunately, we are wading into the bodies, bodies, bodies discourse.
This is very an old school keep it topic when just two people would have a skirmish online and then we would shout at them for 40 minutes or whatever. I'm feeling very retro right now.
It involves a film. It involves a queer celebrity and it involves a New York Times critic. This is definitely classic keep it.
Yes. All right. So these are some of our greatest hits. Hope you enjoy.
And it's also, we're waiting until like day 85 of discussing this thing, but I do.
And it was supposed to be one DM. Yeah. Like it accidentally spiraled into this other thing anyway.
But in honor of Lena Wilson, the New York Times critic who sparked this entire bodies, bodies, bodies discourse this week, we're also going to discuss our favorite children of nepotism in Hollywood, which... We're also going to discuss why I hate the term nepotism baby.
Mm, okay, that's exciting. I mean, unfortunately, many of my favorite celebrities are nepotism products. So I in a way, I'm part of the problem. That said, we'll get into it. But sometimes if you're the child of celebrity, you have a specific urgent need to separate yourself from that other famous person and establish yourself as something else, which I think sometimes makes the celebrity more interesting. Anyway, we'll get there.
And we will be joined today by the fantastic John Boyega to discuss his new film, Breaking.
I still have a very vivid memory of him emerging in the movie Attack the Block, which was a pretty, that year in movies was pretty boring. And so that movie, which felt very current, young at the time, it's him and, you know, Jodie Whittaker, teens, British sci-fi alien movie. I remember when he was like the only exciting thing happening. So I wonder if he remembers it too. We'll get into it.
All right. We'll be right back with more Keep It. Join Josie Toda, Alicia Pascual Pena, and Yasmin Hamadi, three fearless young actresses, disruptors, and best friends as they navigate the issues that affect their lives on Crooked Media's newest podcast, Dare We Say. From hookup culture and social media to structural racism and LGBTQ+ rights, the girls are leaving no stone unturned and no DM unread when it comes to discussing what matters. They won't shy away from diving into deep, controversial topics that are important to their generation. The girls even turn to their elders, actors, activists, comedians, experts, politicians, and 26-year-olds. All right, that's enough. In an attempt to understand the world their generation was handed and what they could do to improve it. We promise you don't want to miss this show, so grab your kombucha, your iced coffee, and your 17 other beverages and catch a new episode of Dare We Say every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. Young people scare me, But dare I say, I'm excited for Dare We Say. With less than 100 days to the midterms, it's safe to say midterm madness is settling in. You can find all new Vote Save America tees and hats in the Cricut store. And look, we aren't the ones who decided to politicize baseball hats, but ours come in cuter colors. So whether you're repping the West, Midwest, East, or South, we've got something for you. A portion of every single order on the Cricut store goes to Liz Cheney's fundraiser. I'm kidding. It goes to Vote Riders, the leading organization focused on informing citizens of their state's voter ID requirements and helping them secure the documents they need to vote. So check out Cricut.com/merch for the latest drop. Then head to VoteSafeAmerica.com to find out how to get involved and do your part in the lead up to this year's midterms. The film Bodies, 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 starring Amanda Stenberg, recently single Pete Davidson, and recently married Lee Pace.
And recently fucking gobbled up by gay men on the internet, Lee Pace. Every time you fucking turn around, somebody can't believe he's tall.
I will say that Paul McCallion has a fantastic tweet. Writer and comedian Paul McCallion has a good tweet about Lee Pace only goes viral for being tall and hot.
Right. I mean,
fantastic.
People have never seen people still have never seen Pushing Daisies, you know.
They haven't seen Wonder Falls, okay? You know, they were not in the trenches like we were. they were not in the Brian Fuller trenches watching our favorite shows get canceled left and right. Yeah. So,
fantastic Emmy win for Kristen Chenoweth, former Keep It guest, by the way. Anyway, continue.
So I am very glad that Lee Pace announced that he's married in his GQ interview, because there's this very specific thing where people will claim like a celebrity online and then run their likability into the ground. I think someone was like, the internet tried really hard to Oscar Isaac Lee Pace.
Wow, right. I remember that those years of Oscar Isaac being our endless Tumblr boyfriend, correct?
So
there's usually one. You know, it became Timothy Chalamet after a while. You know the guy.
Yeah. This movie hit theaters recently, and a review from Lena Wilson, a lesbian film critic. This is important. By the way, I'm not just being Tucker Carlson here.
a lesbian film critic ran her mouth. Yeah. Huh? It's actually really fun to do a Tucker Carlson impression. I mean, do it in the privacy of your own home. You don't all need to see it, but it's fun.
Anyway, a review from Lena has sparked a feud with Amanda and kicked off a debate across social media. And the one thing I want to say about this is, why is it always Alina?
There are many varieties of Lena, and they run amok in this pop culture universe.
Whenever I see Alina trending on Twitter, it's never Horn. No,
damn it, you took my joke. I was going to use
the name's been downhill, okay? Yeah.
That was the last good one, I guess. I enjoy things about actually most of the other Lenas in contention here, but Lena Horne, yes, a cut above.
Anyway, what did you think of the movie before we get into the discourse?
This is a movie that's never going to be my favorite type of movie. Like, I'm never going to tell you, oh, it's the best movie of 2022 or something. For what it is, really enjoyed it. And I thought Rachel Sennott, that's who we should have our eyes on. I thought she was fabulous in it. She was in the movie Shiva Baby, if you saw that.
Mm-hmm. She was also in, if you recall, Call Your Mother on ABC, which I could not stop talking about like a year ago.
Right.
And
right.
I only bring this up because I ran into two of the cast members, Joey and Austin, last night at the Honk for Jesus Save Your Soul premiere. And I was going in again about Call Your Mother and how much I love that show and Rachel.
Also, I want to say that Amanda Stenberg did give one of the best performances of the past, whatever, 5 years in The Hate U Give, which a movie I don't know that I need to see again, but was gripping at the time.
She also managed to be compelling in that really boring Damien Chazelle jazz series.
Oh my God, right. Yeah. I forget that Damien Chazelle hasn't just given us whatever, the three movies he's given us.
Yeah. I enjoyed the movie. I thought that Pete Davidson was surprisingly like very funny in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The highlight was obviously Lee Pace's abs. And Lee Pace in that in one of those glowing teeth whitening masks as well.
That
was a good jump scare in the film. I will say that I thought the dialogue was really funny, and I thought its satire of Gen Z was sort of really sharp until the third act.
I felt the same way. It's not something I need to see again. Like you've seen one parody in a way, you've seen them all. That said, for a satirical horror movie, I did laugh several times. I mean, it's just rare that I'm watching a horror movie other than Scream or something in the Scream franchise and actually laughing. I remember Your Next had some moments I thought were funny, but not a common experience for me.
Yeah. Anyway, Lena Wilson wrote a review for the New York Times, and she said of the film, "The only thing that really sets Bodies, Bodies, Bodies apart is its place in the A24 hype machine, where it doubles as a 95-minute advertisement for Cleavage and Charlie XCX's latest single." And first of all, bitch, I'm happy with that.
Okay, right. Where else am I going to get that? Are you pretending Cleavage? That Charlie XCX is hyped enough?
As rigorous as Charlie XCX's fan base is, we're not getting to number one on Billboard, okay? So right. We need the help.
No, you say the words Charlie XCX to my mother, and she thinks it's like a cruel nickname Lucy has come up with for Charlie Brown.
But the thing about this review is that obviously she reduces the film to a cleavage machine, which is wild considering there's not a lot of cleavage in this film.
It's not. I don't have a lasting impression of cleavage when I leave the movie. It's just, I wasn't thinking about it. I guess I wouldn't be the proper audience for that either. So I don't know. Maybe one kind of person is likelier to notice that than I am. But you know what? Actually, growing up, I've had several friends who've had breast reductions. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Do you even, I've never looked below your neck before. So you could be making this up to me. Again, I'm saying I might not be the right person to make this judgment. But
the Illinois suburbs, home of breast reductions.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess. Yeah.
I will save my only lasting impression of cleavage from this film was Lee Pace's.
Right. Maybe she meant that. If she had specified that, that would have been almost progressive.
Well, that would have been homophobic.
See? Mm-hmm.
Which is what Amanda Stenberg was accused of being when she DM'd Lena on Instagram and said, "Your review was great. Maybe if you had gotten your eyes off my tits, you could have watched the movie," which is funny.
I laughed. Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny. I think it's a little ambiguous as to what tone she's going for, because it is funny, but it's like, is it cutting to the critic or is it cutting to A24? Or, you know, so you could sort of interpret it a couple of ways secretly.
But Lena responded back with, "Hey, Amanda, generally a big fan of your work, but this is sure something. Really wishing you well in your career and life. Have a nice night." And then she posted it to TikTok.
Where all the good journalism goes, by the way.
If you're a New York Times critic and you don't have an accompanying TikTok, what are you doing?
No, you're not getting the Pulitzer. That I know.
"I don't want anything else to come of this. I am devastated to have received this message in the first place. I was a genuine huge fan of hers, but I'm posting this because I don't want this person who has more social power than me to think that it's fucking okay to do something like this. It's unfathomably weird to get 'I don't want you in the locker room while I'm changing' bullying from a whole other lesbian." Girl. "I don't want this to go anywhere, but I am taking a private DM and making a TikTok about it."
Right. No, first of all, there is something deeply dubious about taking a private message, even if it's from a celebrity. In fact, it's in particularly dubious because you're pretending like the public is entitled to hear something because a public figure has said it to you. So already turning that into a moment where you're quote unquote reclaiming the narrative, but instead kind of just going after somebody is strange. And also, I just feel like this critic should expect that sometimes people in the review you're writing about will reach out in a way and to react as if, I don't know, if you interpret what they say as homophobic, that's one thing. But obviously, Amandla is queer. So did she really think that? Anyway.
Yeah. The I don't want you in the locker room while I'm changing bullying is so, what a weird phrase.
Yeah. Like, clearly and, they're not in a locker. Anyway.
And then she goes on to say, do you think she Instagrammed, DM'd Allison Wilmore, Justin Chang, and Anthony Lane like this, who also reviewed the film? Well, no, because I don't think their reviews reduced the film to being a Russ Meyer film.
Yeah, right, right. So, yeah, weird comparison. All right.
Which then she kept going with, it's always weird when the homophobia is coming from inside the house, but this is something else. And, girl... I hate that this has basically become the slap.
Sure.
Because people, there are actually people online acting like Amandla shot this woman in the face.
Actually, I thought Amandla's response de-escalated it somewhat successfully. Of course, it didn't actually end up de-escalating it. But she said, I just thought I would get out here really quickly because I'm receiving a lot of commentary on the internet for being a very naughty girl and for sending a DM that I thought was hilarious. There's a film critic and her name is Lena Wilson. She described the movie as a 95-minute advertisement for cleavage, which I thought was hilarious. I'm proud that a piece of work I was a part of was described in such a renowned publication. I thought it was hilarious. Well, according to her, she thought it was hilarious. I don't know if you heard her say it 75 times, but anyway.
Definitely me when I think something's hilarious. I say, right. You know what? It was so hilarious. It was really hilarious.
Me watching the Carol Burnett show. It's really hilarious. It's really hilarious. Tim Conway is really hilarious. But she continued, I think Lena was trying to make a commentary about A24 sexualizing me, sexualizing my body, exploiting young women in order to sensationalize them. I want to stop right here. So she's actually calling out something that I feel could have been called out, you know, mm-hmm. and she's in an A24 movie. So I find that even kind of risky on her behalf in a cool way. But she goes, which I understand. I wear this tank top in the movie because me and the costume designer felt it fit the character well. I do get tired of people talking about my chest. It seems to me in Hollywood, it's not normalized to have boobs that are above an A or a B cup. So I felt like she is, in fact, acknowledging that the comment did have a bit of a barb in it, you know? So
yeah,
I felt there was a mature response and kind of a cool response, even though it's dubious that she said something was hilarious 40 times.
Yeah. And it was nice to see her critique A24 in her comment too, you know, even though my biggest critique with A24 is that they're also an Urban Outfitters masquerading as a film production company.
Correct. Yes.
Lita then went on to say, I will not be checking her story, but I hope she gets well soon. So Lita implies that she didn't even check out Amandla's really thoughtful response, which I also think is a lie. I'm sure she watched it.
Oh, I have the distinct feeling she spends a lot of time on the internet. Do you get that impression?
And I feel like I should post this to hold Amandla accountable, but it also really seems like she might be going through something. So truly wishing the best, which then made me hate this woman more than I already did. Like, I thought it was funny at first, but now she's implying that Amandla is unwell.
Right. And I just want to say, when I saw this woman's TikTok, initially I thought it was, of course, Danny from A Shot at Love with Tila Tequila, and I was excited to see her. But Danny's nature is kind, and I wasn't getting that from this woman, so I was jolted.
I want to know where this particular white woman voice comes from. There's always this, like, Mount Holyoke, like, inflection that comes from, like, a specific white woman who's also queer and needs to tell you something about yourself. It's just right. A specific inflection. And I heard it, and it was like nails on a chalkboard to me.
The Seven Sisters, I blame all of you equally. So, Smith on down to Wellesley. Yeah.
I think that being a New York Times critic and getting a DM from a celeb is probably something that's happened before. It's definitely happened before.
Yeah.
It's also before the days of DMs. Like, the celeb would have sent you an email or called you or, like, cursed you out at Sardi's. I don't know.
Right.
And I think every journalist has stories like this. And, you know, like, if we, like, you know, like, when I off the cuff mentioned, you know, like, Azealia Banks, you know, calling me out for saying she was broke on this podcast, which I apologized for. But I thought that was funny, you know? Right. Or, like, everyone has a story that they can sort of reference from time to time. But to go on TikTok and make it a big thing, I feel like is abusing your social power, which is funny because she tried to claim that Amandla has more social power than her, but she's the one who took it to TikTok and started to get it trending.
And I'm also, sure she's a writer for the New York Times. Sorry, yes. That's one of the larger newspapers, if I'm not mistaken.
It's not bigger than Marquette University High School's The Flambeau, okay? I had more circulation.
Lots of journalism, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I had more circulation than the New York Times. I'll let you know that.
I'm sure you were reviewing the newest Kevin Little single and everybody was eating it up.
She clearly took it to TikTok because she's looking to make her TikTok bigger. Like, this woman is on TikTok constantly talking about how she's an amazing culture critic. She's a reader. She's just simply great. There was some... someone was sharing one of her old TikToks from February and it's truly like a 4-minute TikTok about how she's good at her job because of osmosis. She has no formal training, but cultural criticism is an art and she's really fucking good at it.
And as always with geniuses, they have to tell you they're good at the thing because you can't figure it out on your own, you know? So we're lucky that she was there to point out her own skills. And I simply love it when people can't shut up about how they read. I find it endearing and rad. And it makes me want to be literary, hearing you congratulate yourself for owning pages.
Most of her TikToks sound like she strapped James Bond to a table as she's explaining her evil plan.
I am a critic! Yes. Daniel Craig, like, sideways glances, figuring out how to get out of the room.
Also, I just read the Poisonwood Bible.
Barbara King, solve your way out of this.
I thought the entire thing was very funny.
Very internet, yeah.
Until this woman jumped out the window. Right. Like, she couldn't let it be funny. She had to ruin it. And then the internet had to ruin it by implying that Amandla was basically trying to kill this woman.
The hate she is still giving. Yes. That's what that movie's about. Anyway, yeah. Funny old school internet skirmish. I enjoyed it for a second. And also, it's one of those things where everyone's personality kept emerging. Like, oh, I thought we were dealing with this one type of person. Then you turned out to be this other type of person. And then, oh, Amandla thought you were kidding, or did she? Anyway, lots of getting to question people's motives again and again. A big old clue game.
I honestly hope it's dead as a conversation. But if it's not, I need a new twist. Like, I need someone else from the film to jump in.
Well, also her Lena Wilson's dad is a prominent New York Times writer. Would love for him to jump in and be like, my daughter got the very best academic training. I don't know. I'm picturing like a sort of Richie Rich type parent figure jumping in here.
The other thing about the one last thing I want to say about Lena is that she implies that she went on in her TikTok to imply that she's so good at her job. And that's why at like 24 years old, a barely edited review that she wrote hit the front page of the New York Times. And I would like to point out, sis, that you were describing nepotism.
Right. I've brought this up before. Fran Lebowitz talking about how actors in Hollywood who are nepotism children are obsessed with saying, well, it got me my foot in the door, but I had to work really hard after that. She goes, the whole game is getting your foot in the door. That's what everybody wants. The opportunity to be in the room. Yeah.
Anyway, if you want more from Lena Wilson, she's right there on the New York Times. She's still posting her reviews. And I want to point out that her bio on the New York Times describes her as a project manager at the New York Times and a freelance writer covering film, TV, technology, and lesbian culture.
Which I consider technology. It's redundant. You're a journalist, right? Edit it.
Wally, my favorite lesbian. All right, when we're back, John Boyega joins us to discuss his new film, Breaking. Keep It is brought to you by Barefoot Dreams. Lewis?
Yes?
When you see footprints in the sand, that was when I carried you in my Barefoot Dreams robe.
Now, is that a Leona Lewis song? No?
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams, especially now as the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary. With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket. And while many have attempted to duplicate their blankets, robes, and more, Barefoot Dreams' fabrication and quality cannot be replicated, so don't believe the dupes. Girl, this blanket is it.
I effing love this blanket. I'm thinking about it right now, and I want to jump in my bed, which is sponsored by something that we'll do another ad for momentarily. Get ready. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times. Jesus, get a life, Oprah. My God. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as their collection of ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are made with premium materials. Their products make the perfect gifts, too. I throw this thing on. I wear it like a shawl. I look exactly like Ellen Burstyn. And I am the coziest a human being can be. Because, by the way, it's still that time in Los Angeles where it's like pretty mild outside and then your apartment is cold. I can't explain it. I don't know things like basic science. For Keep It listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code KEEPIT15. Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams' soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life.
Kent State, their name does something for people. When people hear that you're a Kent State grad, they're like, oh, yeah, I have a lot of nurses like that. And they're good nurses. They want to hire you because you're from Kent State in their nursing program. They teach the art of nursing. They teach the therapeutic communication. They teach how to really care for the person and not just knowledge. Even when it's hard in classes, even when this is a new adjustment, the school itself has the people and the support that you need to be the best nurse that you can be.
Begin at Kent State University.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is back. Get ready for Way Day. For 3 days only, May 4th through May 6th, you can get up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar carts, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. Plus, everything ships free. Don't miss the sale to get up to 80% off everything home, even a garden gnome. Way Day starts May 4th. Head to Wayfair.com now to start filling your car.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You know him from Attack the Block, Star Wars, and Steve McQueen's recent Small Axe. And now he's back in theaters this week with the true life thriller, Breaking. We're thrilled to welcome to Keep It the fantastic John Boyega.
How you doing? Good?
We're great. Great. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Pleasure.
The impression from looking at your filmography is that you have worked basically endlessly since about 2011. The nature of some of these movies is they're so huge, they must have taken months and months and months to film. And does being that busy increase your appetite to make good movies, or is it ever just completely exhausting?
It can be exhausting. It can increase your appetite. Right now, my appetite has been increased because I'm working with people who actually understand me and who actually have seen my previous work separate from Star Wars. It's always complicated when you work in an industry of people who are basing the movies off of the mainstream kind of movies that you see, whereas in the kind of indies and other type, like Half of Yellow Sun, like Small Axe, My Murder, little things that I've done where I've been able to be given opportunities to show more versatility. So I'd say it's a bit of it's a bit of both, you know. It just comes in these random times where you just have to kind of adjust, you know.
Mm-hmm. We just had Connie Britton on our show last week, obviously tremendous actor, but honestly I look at just the actors you've worked with, and you're working with Viola Davis and The Woman King coming up, which we're obviously thrilled about. Do you have favorite actors you've had kind of amazing moments with on screen where you've learned something from them? Because I just think of somebody, like, I think it's rare that somebody as young as you has worked with so many, like, just sheer greats basically since the beginning.
Yeah, I've learned a lot, definitely from Viola, you know, just, and this is just from conversations. I think obviously the work looks fun, but when we get on set, we're all colleagues. So it's a different, even though my age is my age, it's like a different kind of vibe. But I listen to the stories that they tell. I listen when they get into that mode, because a lot of the times the older actors are here to work with you. And so they kind of need, there needs to be a mutual respect for you to be able to collaborate. But those moments where, you know, the work vibe kind of fades a bit, and then they step into kind of like the OG status, you know, mentorship, are really, really important. But I just listen to the stories that they tell, and the stories that they share. It's been really good so far.
Mm-hmm. You had an interview recently too with the Daily Beast where you talked about, you know, you had this conversation with Daniel Kaluuya about, you know, the work you wanted to do in the future, and just what does it look like, you know, like, I feel like two honestly iconic actors sitting down and just talking with each other about acting and talking about, like, what you want to do. Like, how did your relationship with him sort of form? And I feel like, is that someone you want to do, like, work with in the future? You know, I know he's in the Peel universe a lot.
Yeah. No, most definitely, I'd love to work with him in the future. But Daniel's someone that I knew coming up from the UK, mm-hmm. and it was a play called Sucker Punch, and I just waited behind mm-hmm. the play to meet him. I hadn't done any work at the time, so I just wanted to, you know, ask for advice. So I think that's just the energy of our relationship from when we first met. The first time I met him, I was asking for advice. So, and the advice is actually quite good. So I always invite him over and just, you know, try to connect and just to share knowledge. Daniel's just slightly older than me, and Daniel has a perspective that I think is quite unique and interesting. And anytime we can break bread and just share minds, especially navigating through this industry, and then especially as Black Brits, it's something that is quite good for the path that we're on.
What would you say is maybe like your favorite like nugget of advice you've gotten from him over the years? And also maybe just talk a bit about that whole thing about too, yes, being Black people in this industry, but also British in the industry too.
I mean, the advice was just based on what I've said for the past few days, which is, you know, just work with people who want to work with you, work mm-hmm. with people that mess with you, work with people that understand what you're doing, work with people that actually want to explore the versatility that you carry, and not necessarily working with people that can sometimes pigeonhole you and box you and have a wrong definition of your talent. And I think that's very important, because Jordan Peele had to see something specifically in Daniel to also give him this kind of consistent, strong work that Jordan's been giving him over the years. And that in itself is a testament to finding somebody who's on the same page as you, who's creatively aligned with you. And I think that's what, yeah, doing that, especially after the Star Wars era, has just granted me a much more healthy, better career that I'm more comfortable in.
Who would you say are creative collaborators you've had who you felt surprised to be simpatico with, surprised to have the connection, like they understood what you brought in a way that you couldn't have anticipated?
I wouldn't say I was surprised, because they were all Black. No, I mean, like, sometimes, you know, just get the people them and then they just understand, you know. But, you know, included in that is Abby Corbin, you know, who's come in as the director of Breaking and done a fantastic job. And I think that we meshed on a level that was quite important to me, because, you know, it was such a quick turnaround time before I got the script. And then when we got to set, and Abby, the collaboration, the detail that she had, the documentation was so specific. She had details down to how Brian walked, how he spoke, you know, just different details about him. And her offering me this information made me feel seen as an actor. It's kind of like, you're giving me this expressive detail, even detail when it comes to his body language, his voice, because you know I do this. You know that I a transformed self. You know, I don't play when it comes to my skill set. So for her to acknowledge that and then for us to be on the same level was fantastic.
Speaking of people like you've worked with as well, you're with Nicole Beharie in Breaking. And even going back to Attack the Block, you know, with Jodie Whittaker, I find it interesting that, like, the three of you, and I'm sure other people you've worked with too, have been, like, people who've been under intense scrutiny for, like, genre things that they've done. You know, Jodie was the first female doctor and dealt with a lot of that. And then Nicole Beharie, you know, dealt with her own thing on Sleepy Hollow. Like, is that something that, like, you and maybe Nicole, like, bonded over, being Black people in these sci-fi things, that, like, there's a small vocal white minority that's just, like, always going to attack people who step into these roles?
They would wish we bonded because of them.
Yeah.
They in a consideration like that? Nah, bro. Nah, we did it. We did it. I mean, what we bond on is the share excitement. Nicole specifically, Sleepy Hollows, I had watched. I had actually been in LA doing pilot season while Sleepy Hollows was coming out. So when I saw the billboards, I was kind of like, you know, that was motivation for me being in town, wanting to book a pilot, you know, hopefully, you know, get a TV series. I think that the work that everybody has done previously is something that you fixate on more than anything. And, you know, the whole reason why you're collaborating or even chose a project in the first place is because you hear that, you know, individuals like Nicole and Salinas and Michael are attached and want to come on board. So that's where the bonding happens, I guess, when it comes to kind of like sharing minds, when it comes to trolls and stuff. It's just, we're just cussing them out, just talking shit.
No, wait, I would not have guessed you were somebody who had to afford LA pilot season ever. I look at your projects and they're, you know, there are some, you know, American franchises and stuff, but do you have any stories from pilot season in LA? Because that seems like a pretty treacherous undertaking.
It was treacherous. And I did pilot season in LA with public transport. So when people come and say in LA, and you lot don't know. You lot don't know. But also, I commend myself when it comes to that as well, because that's the concept I always tell people. I always tell people that it kind of reminds me of going to the gym and transforming your body. You know, when you go to the gym, you go for like 6 months, you transform your body, you come back. I'm like, who's going to be more surprised, you or the people seeing you for the first time in 6 months? And it's usually going to be the people, because they don't know the specifics of the work you put in, the early hours. And you know, the illusion of success is to kind of like scribble out those moments, and it just looks like fast paced, just success back to back. And, you know, that helps us in getting our, getting the positivity out there. But at the same time, yeah, most definitely, there've been some times, you know, I got lost at Skid Row, because the buses, I had to understand the buses, because you know, I was on the opposite way. I was staying in I've stayed everywhere. I was staying in Santa Monica, stayed off of, in Inglewood, I stayed in bloody Los Feliz, so all over the place. So I've done my time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how the bus would get you. I guess if you stayed downtown, maybe you could get lost on Skid Row or something.
One time I stayed downtown with some small little in a room in somebody's apartment. So I, you know, got the rented out the room and stuff to me and stuff. I've just been around, and I've been lost several times because pilot season is back to back. It was about three projects. Sometimes at three auditions a day, sometimes maybe even four. And then I was staying with like a whole bunch of acting students in Runyon. At the end of Runyon Canyon, there's some like little student accommodation there. For I've been about, you know, I've been coming to LA, you know, 8 years ago I started coming. So it's like a long time ago. It's been good though.
One of my favorite things when actors talk about, you know, like their early auditions and things in LA, you know, and especially like a pilot season thing, is the people that they were constantly seeing or the people that they'd be up against and like who they now see are colleagues of theirs. And they're like, remember when we didn't book like Rookie Blue or whatever? Are there people that you remember being like in the trenches with you, and now you see them and you're like, hey,
Michael B. Jordan, we were auditioning for Spike Lee's The Brick. And I think I recognized him because he had been in The Wire already. I think he had been in The Wire and I recognized him. But he was doing press ups at the audition because he was auditioning to be boxers in that. I just remember this dude did press ups. I reckon I feel like, listen, it's the dude from The Wire. Because I'm a big, huge fan of The Wire. I've always kind of like, you know, been a huge fan of everybody's, even been slightly involved in that show. So I recognized him straight up. I was like, isn't that Michael B? And then obviously, now look at him now, which is fantastic.
I guess we should talk about The Wire for a second, since obviously your co-star Michael K. Williams was on it. Did that show come up a lot on set? I mean, how could it not? The Wire is one of those shows where there's no second one of them. There are, of course, gritty dramas in the world, but The Wire is second to none in this universe.
No, it didn't come up. It only came up like once for me to say, I really liked you in that. And that was like the beginning, kind of beginning conversations. Everything else, then, you know, it became about the work because it's so intense. It's an indie movie. You know how that is. I feel like the bigger the budget, the more time to have fun on set. That's what I've clocked. There you go. Some budgets is just, this is just to film. That you lot don't have time to even talk on set. And you just find the fun moments within that.
Well, I mean, then I would imagine you would have had a lot of time to have fun on the Star Wars set, where obviously everyone loved your relationship with Oscar Isaac. How did that like evolve over three films?
Yeah. I mean, it was blatant. I think the chemistry was one of the main catalysts for Oscar even getting a role, you know, in the first place. Mm-hmm. And for us even being partnered up, because I had auditioned with another actor who was very, very talented as well. But it came down to chemistry and myself and Oscar. I don't know what it is. As soon as I saw him, I just started laughing. It's just that bromance, you know what I mean? It's just, that's just my guy, you know? So that chemistry was always something that people really, really enjoyed in the movies.
Have you ever had chemistry with an actor that, I don't want to say wasn't there when you were just talking, but like something else emerges once you're doing the scene with them and you're like, whoa, what the fuck is that?
Oh, yeah. I say Jamie Foxx, but you lot ain't seen that movie yet.
Okay.
True.
Yeah. I feel like that with Jamie. I feel like on set when we're working with each other on Dayclo and Tyrone, we felt like we found some real cool moments that we didn't expect to find, you know, when we were walking onto that set. And that's just because, you know, Jamie's got that talent for improv. And me, I don't mind going back and forth on that. So, you know, when you put two of us in the scene together, sometimes you find some different type of magic that you're able to make. And that's something for me as an actor. I'm like, wow, that's real cool.
Mm-hmm. What I really love is that, you know, you're you know, trade theater actor as well. And I have to imagine that the kind of roles that you had pre, you know, launching into Hollywood were a lot more varied and a lot of like just sort of like things that might seem like a left field for people who know like your film work now. Are there any roles that you played in theater that, you know, you sort of like think of fondly, or something that like you did before on stage that you're really like, I can't wait to have a film like this where I can show people that I can do this kind of thing?
Oh yeah, I've done a full contemporary dance show at the National Theatre at the Cottesloe.
Okay.
I'd love to do a film that goes into contemporary dance, body movement, something that allows me to dance, be free, explore that energy. I done another play called Wojciech at the Old Vic Theatre, but a soldier struggling with PTSD and having illusions and going through some serious mental health issues. And that I felt was a very, very powerful role that I would love to do publicly. And then I want to be one of the ensemble dancers in that MJ the musical. I just want to come in a second.
one of my friends, Wanze, is in that musical, and I've seen it twice already, and it's really fucking fantastic.
Man, it's really bloody good, mate. It's so good. But I love the stage. The stage is where you find your versatility, and then you come into some Hollywood movie making, and Hollywood seeks to identify you, but it's weird. It's like they identify you within the roles. It's like you have to be the role, and that's not how actors are trained. You know, that's not even acting. That's not how it works. You know, it's not about me at all. It's more about what I can do to transcend and become the character. And I think on stage that is praised more than sometimes in the Hollywood style of filmmaking.
Are there qualities and characters you've played that have been conferred upon you by like you know, casting directors like, oh, he is like that character he played once upon a time, and they're just totally wrong. Do you ever feel like misrepresented by the work you've done?
Definitely. And we just stopped that. I mean, that, you know, but not work I've done. It's been mostly requests. Work I've done most likely is because, yeah, they recognize that. Even though, even with Finn, like, you know, when JJ said that Finn is not an everyday hero, he's going to start off at this vulnerable position where he's got the small little afro, he's slightly more kiddish. Like, even looking at Force Awakens, like, I'm not like that. Like, even at that age, I wasn't like that. So that was every character that I've played, I've had to kind of change something with the walk, the talk, accent. It's because I like to play. I don't want to be myself on screen unless let's go and make documentaries, right? That's a whole different format.
And you've worked with, you know, like JJ, as we said, you know, like Catherine Bigelow already, Rian Johnson, and then Gina Price, by the way, and the Woman King, who I adore her. I think she's one of my favorite film directors. As a person who, you know, like, is looking at people who you want to work with, people who are going to understand you, are there particular maybe directors or other creators who you have your eye on? Like, I want to do something with them.
Yeah, I'll definitely want to re-collaborate with Steve McQueen. That would be fantastic to do mm-hmm. something. I think Malik Vitale, who directed Imperial Dreams, we've spoken. And he wants me to really transform, and he's got something real cool for me. So we've been cooking in the lab. Mm-hmm. It's mostly people that I've worked with before. Because at this stage, you know, have a little bit more respect for yourself and seek to collaborate with directors who also, mm-hmm. they would have done the work before and all that kind of stuff as me, but also directors who actually know of you, who actually know what you can do, and you know of them, and there's that kind of mutual synergy where you go, let's go and collaborate on something. I'm a little bit much more strict when it comes to that, because I just find it severely important.
I was like fascinated by a quote you gave recently where you talked about how it's sort of exhausting basically to have to keep paying respect certain times, like how it's expected of you to be sort of deferential. And you said you can pay respect, but sometimes you'll be overpaying and selling yourself short. And I feel like
the amount. Overpaying, like. Yeah.
What are your experiences with that? I just thought that was a kind of fascinating and probably ongoing struggle that an actor faces. Like, how much do I have to prove I'm, you know, find to work with or whatever?
You get fame and you get a bit of money. You just have to understand a lot of people are going to assume you're an asshole, because fame and money in folklore churns out assholes. So in that sense, you're fighting against really intense assumptions, that some assumptions where you can't blame the audience for feeling that way, because that's an example that other people have left behind as well. And that's what, you know, we are to a certain extent, our experiences and what we've kind of taken in. But then with that, you then realize that, you know, you need to learn how to be calm in the most interesting experiences, because people can misjudge you, can misjudge your character, and then can misjudge whether or not, you know, you're good enough to work with and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the time it is, you know, severe misjudgment. And it's because we've dodged a nuanced conversation, which will give you the detail, which will be like, oh, okay, we're both cool. And so that's why I'm like, find people who are committed to listening to you, not people who are committed to misunderstanding you. And there's a lot of that, you know, in the world, because sometimes, you know, people don't do the work to understand, they do the work to respond, you know, and that's what I'm maneuvering right now.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. You
know? God, what a pleasure.
Yeah. I mean, Lewis and I were talking about it before. I just feel like in 2011, when like Attack the Block first hit, that movie was so phenomenal in like a year where like there weren't a lot of great movies that year. It felt new and it felt fresh.
You were like the only exciting thing from that time. I remember specifically all the movie bloggers were like, oh, John Boyega. Well, that's exciting.
I didn't get out. Like, the way they got that off the red box was crazy.
Breaking is out in theaters August 26th, and The Woman King with Viola Davis and They Clone Tyrone with Jamie Foxx are out later this year. To post or not to post? That is the question, at least for the hosts of Dare We Say. Josie Tota, Alicia Pasquale Pena, and Yasmin Hamidi talk about performative activism and how social media has mobilized the activists in all of us for the best and the worst. Plus, in a new segment, the Icuation Room, the girls discuss one of the most polarizing topics, the Zara landing page. You don't want to miss it. New episodes of Dare We Say drop every Thursday wherever you get your podcast.
Kent State's reputation in the fashion industry is something you would hear from everyone when you're in New York City.
I will say we're quite well known for being hard workers.
Kent is really known for delivering well-rounded students.
Kent has one of the most prestigious fashion programs in the U.S. and also internationally ranked.
Our alumni are in every corner of the industry, every job position that you can imagine.
They all are ready. They have all the courses. They have everything under, you know, under their belt.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is back. Get ready for Wayday. For 3 days only, May 4th through May 6th, you can get up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar cards, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. Plus, everything ships free. Don't miss the sale to get up to 80% off everything home, even a garden gnome. Wayday starts May 4th. Head to Wayfair.com now to start filling your cart.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
With less than 100 days until the midterm, it's safe to say midterm madness is settling in. Right now, you can find all new Vote Save America merch in the Crooked Store. A portion of every single order on the Crooked Store goes to Vote Riders, the leading organization focused on informing citizens of their state voter ID requirements and helping them secure the documents they need to vote. So check out crooked.com/merch for the latest drop, then head to votesaveamerica.com to do your part and find out how to get involved leading up to this year's midterms. So we got into nepotism a bit by discussing prominent lesbian Lena Wilson. But also, Idris Elba is on the promo tour for his new film, Beast, in which he plays a father protecting his two daughters from lions on a South African nature preserve. During an interview with The Breakfast Club, Idris mentioned how his own daughter auditioned for the movie, but ultimately was not cast, which has sparked another online debate about nepotism in Hollywood. And I would like to, one, talk about this, but then also talk about our favorite nepotism babies in Hollywood. And I only brought up that I hate that word because, I don't know, something about saying nepotism baby, It just doesn't roll off the tongue for me. It feels like,
oh, sure.
I like saying Santa baby,
you're right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I like saying Muppet baby, nepotism baby. Sounds creepy. Makes me sound like Woody Allen.
It feels very clinical. It should. Mm-hmm. There should be something a little bit slangier.
Yeah, you know, I feel like a 20th Century Fox exec bringing the nepotism babies.
Well, yeah, I want to say about this Idris Elba story. Not only was she not cast, but specifically she wasn't cast because, quote, the chemistry wasn't right, which I have to say feels so insulting to her. But I think that's the rough part of that story, because otherwise, actually, it's kind of a good story to hear, right? Like, all right, they gave the girl an opportunity, but it wasn't in the bag. They wanted the movie to still be, you know, achieve a certain standard. And so they cast somebody else. But man, is that funny.
Baby, you better run a 23andMe, because if the chemistry's not there, what's your daddy hiding?
Yeah. Beast of what nation? We're not sure. We have to figure out where you're from.
I want to say that I saw Beast this weekend, and she would have been fine in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you think so?
I think she would have been fine. I think she couldn't have been worse.
Oh, interesting. And that's too bad.
Acting was not the highlight of this film. Let's just put that out there.
Well, all right.
And also, as we're about to discuss our favorite nepotism babies in Hollywood, I just want to point out that I dislike when Black celebrities don't give their kids the opportunities that white celebrities have. Because I feel like there's already, basically every fucking celebrity we like came from nepotism, you know? And I dislike this idea that, you know, like, Black celebrities should, like, have to work harder to get where they are. It's like, let's even this playing field now, you know?
And also, maybe they should actually just get to it a lot faster. Like, if you're a Black celebrity and you have a kid, usher that child onto film. Like, push the bassinet on it. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Just like the Penguin in Batman Returns. Like, toss that baby out, okay? Toss him into Hollywood. More Black parents should really be like Norma Jean's mom, okay?
Yeah, there it is. My favorite nepotism baby, my number one has to be Jane Fonda, because again, it's about the comparison to Henry Fonda, which I enjoy the movie Jezebel and I enjoy Grapes of Wrath. He is not that compelling to me as an actor. He's one of those people where I feel like men just like the stoniness. They like that he's dealing with emotional issues, but he's not cracking. So there's a vulnerability issue there, which Jane Fonda herself has recounted numerous times. Check her memoir. That's a very fraught relationship, and he is a very hug-averse father, shall we say. Meanwhile...
Well, he's not giving hugs now.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. but her performances had searing vulnerability in them and had... You know, she seemed to be kind of shooting daggers into your soul whenever she gave, you know, we're talking about the therapy scenes in Clue, to her big moments as a reporter in the China Syndrome. And so compared to Henry Fonda, not only do I find her more talented, but I find her compensating for the ways in which he lacked as an actor. So I've always thought that dichotomy was more interesting. And also, of course, there is simply no second one of that woman. We've had her on the show, of course. The way she does not flinch when just taking on a completely new, here's an old word, cause or type of movie role. She's so game to energize people and be an active participant in the universe in all the kind of cool ways one can be, and taking advantage of celebrity in cool ways. She's always been aware that, like, if you're going to be a celebrity, like, there are advantages to being one, and why don't I do the ones that are most useful to everybody? So I think that's why she's my number one. Who's your number one nepotism baby?
I'll tell you in a minute, but I do want to chime in that, obviously, yes, I love Jane for not just how she utilizes celebrity, but also, like, how she just enjoys the process of acting. You know, like, she's an A-list actress who... never had a problem jumping into, like, a film like Monster in Law.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And doing fun shit like that instead of, like, boring us with, like, she could have transitioned to just being, like, a very boring actor who's only trying to get Oscars all the time. And I appreciate that she doesn't do that.
Right. Yeah. And also, even, you know, just like a traditional comedy, like 9 to 5, she took it and she's like, actually, this can be extra progressive in X, Y, and Z way too. You know, so she saw, like, opportunities to be, you know, Jane Fonda the activist, even in seemingly silly movies.
You know what? Tangential question. Oscar Clip, this Twitter account that I love to follow, I think retweeted this question about who was the best Oscars acting winner of 1971. And I think
it's a tough question.
It is a hard choice between Jane Fonda and Clarice Leachman.
Yes. Also, I mean... You got Gene Hackman in The French Connection. I feel that French Connection doesn't really hold up as much as people would want it to, but he's obviously one of the greatest actors ever. But Jane versus Cloris, I mean, you're not going to make me choose. So
I've got a gun right now, Lewis.
Ooh, gosh. I do love the therapy scenes in Clute. I guess I would say that. I guess she simply has more to do, so I would say Jane.
Okay.
At one point, I had the entire first therapy scene in that movie memorized, and I would lip sync it at parties. So if you're ever at a party with me, this is what you can expect.
Yeah. So if you get to a party and Lewis is there, hop right back into that Uber.
I'm wearing a shag wig, sitting in front of a TV, and talking about how it's fun to be a prostitute.
I think my favorite is Tracee Ellis Ross.
Interesting. Number one. And why is that? She does seem to me to be very, she's obviously a very funny actress and also awards host. I always like her on an award show. But additionally, she has a secret like alpha thing. Like a haha, don't fuck with me. Fuck you fierce is how I would describe it.
I think she has a really sort of like cool demeanor about her. And I think that I would describe her as my favorite because she's one of the ones who still has her mom's last name, but people are always shocked to discover that Tracee Ellis Ross is Diana Ross's daughter. I feel right. like she has forged enough of her own path in Hollywood where she's become an iconic Black celebrity and her mom's an iconic Black celebrity. And even some Black people still don't know. They're always like discovering that Tracee is Diana's daughter. And I think that is the success. You know,
and
she
also,
didn't.
They're very different, but also Tracee Ellis Ross's humor illuminates something about her mom, which is that she also kind of has that humor too. So it's sort of like by being introduced to Tracee Ellis Ross's like daffiness and, you know, specificity, you realize, oh, that's actually not so much different than Diana Ross. We just think of as this, you know, queen of several genres of music, but mainly for me, disco.
Yeah. And I would also say that through her acting, I feel like she's really differentiated herself from her mom because it's not purely singing, you know?
Yeah.
We're going to ignore that movie she did with Dakota Johnson.
Actually, I mean, I would kind of compare her to Maya Rudolph, right? You know, whose mother is Minnie Riperton, and obviously she died very young, so we don't get to learn as much about her personality. But there is like a, well, you can descend from this regal songbird type and be a completely silly person. That's kind of life-affirming, I think.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's other choices we could have picked, you know, like Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, Carrie Fisher, another person where it's like, I mean, she is so, I would compare her to Miley Cyrus, another nepotism baby, in that they specifically feel disillusioned with the things that usually ruin former child actors, which is they were immediately not obsessed with self-seriousness. They were not, reliant on the three or four things that made them famous as a very young person. They immediately moved in different directions. You know, Carrie Fisher was not just the imp in the movie Shampoo. She then became an author and, a comic in her own right. And a great supporting actress in movies like When Harry Met Sally, etc. And Miley Cyrus, of course, has, you know, after Hannah Montana, she's like, actually, I'm these 70 other fucking weird things you're going to discover. And she's avid in enjoying those parts of herself. So it's kind of cool to see that.
Yeah. I mean, Miley Cyrus for a period became the original Sweetie.
Right. Wow. I've never thought of it that way. Yes.
Which, speaking of Sweetie, also one of my favorite nepotism babies.
Because her parent is who?
Well, her mom is Trinidad Valentin, who was like a video vixen in like Nelly's Ride With Me and DMX's What These Bitches Want. But also, MC Hammer's her uncle and Gabrielle Union is her cousin.
What
and
the
also,
fuck?
And also Snoop Dogg is her cousin.
That's what?
My favorite.
How did they arrange that?
My favorite industry plant.
Yeah, Jesus. Every which direction on the family tree is like somebody who should be on this show. Anyway, how bizarre. Another favorite of mine, of course, is Angelica Houston, just because how did a woman who's shaped like an exotic glass of wine and whose comic sensibilities are so droll and dark descend from John Houston? Okay, he's got some dark sensibilities, actually, but You would never think that they were related. You certainly would never think she was related to her grandfather, Walter Huston, who's, you know, among other movies, fabulous in Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about people who we love, who you would not think about them being related to, you know, the person who got them their foot in the door, my homegirl, Angelina Jolie.
Mother of God. I mean, to bring up Jane Fonda again, when she talks about John Voight, she goes, you know, once upon a time, he would be there with me at these protests. Like something in John Voight's brain cracked.
And isn't he opposite Jane Fonda in Coming Home, her yeah. other Oscar win?
Yeah, they both won Oscars for that movie. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's so weird to imagine like John Voight being a contemporary of Jane Fonda and sort of being a dope person. And then becoming the person he is now.
No. I mean, by the way, speaking about the same movie, also in that movie is Bruce Dern, which brings me to the great nepotism baby.
Laura Dern.
Which, that to me is a really good answer because she doesn't really remind me of her mom, who's a great actress, Diane Ladd. And, of course, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore and a number of Wild at Heart, moving on. Nor does she remind me of Bruce Dern. And yet, she loves her family, brings them up constantly. When she won her Oscar, she was sitting right next to Diane Ladd. It's just a family that really gives you life because they're still, you know, obviously Bruce Dern and Diane Ladd are not together, but like Laura specifically has ties to both of them. And that's always been cool to see.
You know what's funny too is a lot of the celebrities we love are nepotism babies, but also a lot of them are from this old Hollywood thing that used to happen of just like plucking a hot person out of obscurity.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Isn't it usually like men? Like a Brad Pitt or something who is on my hit list now, by the way.
Wait, did you see Bullet Train?
No, I saw the FBI report about him terrorizing Angelina and his kids in the air, like Nightmare at 20,000 Feet with Brad Pitt. So, sorry, I've been rewatching the scene where he gets shot in Burn After Reading a lot.
Oh, that's normal. Just playing it again and again. Yeah,
it's either that or the Meet Joe Black car crash.
Oh my God, plenty of moments in that movie that bear Marsha Gay Harden, we speak your name.
But you know, I feel like there's the era of like a Brad Pitt or something being like just a hot person walking around being plucked out by a casting director.
Right. No, the Hedy Lamarr universe of filmmaking.
Yeah, which is the usual like American dream. You know, you move to Hollywood, you're like I'm just hot. You know,
right.
That's how I'm going to get a role. And it's just the hot people competing with, you know, the children of celebrities. And I will say, shout out to Children of Celebrities for at least evening the playing field for average to sometimes ugly looking people getting film roles, though. I mean it, because like, otherwise it would just be hot people in movies and
that's
celebrities
true.
Putting their, you know, not so hot kids in movies.
Strange children, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, even the playing field.
Yeah, it gives hope to everybody else, and it's hope that's unwarranted because they are related to celebrities, but hope is a good feeling.
Yeah, you know, strange children like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. Right, that's a
people always forget that he is part of the Coppola family.
Right, yeah. Sofia Coppola, another great answer.
I actually want a... I would love a Succession style drama or a House of Gucci, actually, about House of Coppola.
Ooh, I mean, first of all, I feel like Francis Ford Coppola is prone to running with huge ideas that he loses control of quickly. So you could probably just say this to him and he'll do something that he spends $250 million of his own money on.
Yeah, we know the real reason Natalie Emmanuel couldn't talk about Megalopolis the other week is because she couldn't understand the script.
Yeah. Lots of TBD in that script.
All right, when we're back, keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. Lewis, what's yours?
Okay, well, this is going to be a controversial one, but my keep it goes to House of the Dragon, and I'll tell you why. One, I attempted to watch it. And as you know, it's simply not my thing. I don't.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Can you believe? Everybody liked it. So I was like, I'm going to go and try it. I think it actually has nothing to do with the quality of the show. It's just I'm not built to watch people have these scenes over chalices with each other. I just don't care. I can't do it. But also, just a couple of things. The wig work is distracting. I have a hard time with the wigs.
It's pretty bad. Matt Smith?
Yeah. And I relate to Matt Smith. I also have deep set eyes and a large nose. I believe, sis, we're in this together. So, but all the hair in this, if you, every man in this movie looks like Annie Leibovitz's stunt double. And I can't get them apart. And also, of course, the names are all similar. The names all look like, oh, this Scrabble rack sucks. You know, oh, Targaryen, you know, whatever. I'm bad with names like that. And also in literature, I'm like that. You know, if I'm reading, you know, like something like Anna Karenina, when everybody has like a very similar name in that's of another tongue, that's tough for me. But mostly what I resent about this has nothing to do with the quality of the show. 10 million people watched it on its first week, which makes it the biggest debut for an HBO show ever. I know, even more so than Dahl and M. I couldn't believe it. But it just means not only are we going to get a ton more of this show, we're definitely going to get like 80 spinoffs. So I mostly resent that I can just tell the entire HBO universe is going to be taken over by this. And good, people love this. And I think also in this sort of geekdom type show, it's probably the best we've ever had on television, you know? I mean, even running into movies a little bit, it like bumps up against Lord of the Rings in terms of like quality of what you're seeing. So I can't be mad at that. I'm just mad at knowing, oh my God, this is only the beginning. And like Star Wars, it's going to be this ever expanding, you know, universe of spinoffs and reboots and prequels and redos for the rest of time. So I'm simply bracing myself for more Game of Thrones content for the next 70 years.
I'm imagining you in the 80s being like, Dynasty, Dallas, Falcon Crest, enough! Can't we get more shows like China Beach?
Well, China Beach would be late in the 80s into the 90s. So, yeah. But no, Dana Delaney culture is important. In fact, follow Dana Delaney on Twitter. She does a really good job and loves old movies. But you're right. I can't imagine myself getting sick of Dynasty, though.
That's fair. If, you know, if like Keep It existed in the 80s, we'd be talking about Dynasty every week.
Right. No, there'd be a segment on the show called, you know,
Can you believe what happened
Carol tells
Dynasty?
Us to keep it. Yes, right. Yeah.
I would say that I enjoyed House of the Dragon. I actually thought it was pretty good. And I would describe this show, though, as... And I would always describe a lot of Game of Thrones of this. Sometimes there are Game of Thrones episodes that are, like, really, really good. And then, for the most part, you put it on, you watch it, you don't really retain any of the information week to week, but you do look up every now and again, and you're like, okay, that's cool. Someone's baby was just ripped out of their stomach by C-section.
Right, right. It does feel also like a series where they just take huge blocks to do exposition and then move into the thing you really want to see. So you're sort of anticipating those moments in between lots of somber descriptions. But honestly, I mean, like, a lot of Game of Thrones feels similar in tenor and feel to a movie like, this is just what's coming to mind, Elizabeth, you know? Mm. So I'm not saying there's not potential for good kind of classic drama in there. It's just, the minute a dragon appears on the screen, I'm out. I don't want to see the monsters. I don't believe in them.
Feel of an Elizabeth, but it's written more like Excalibur.
Yes. Which, another thing, Matt Smith on this show, does he not look exactly like fucking Highlander? Did no one think, like, here he is, Christopher Lambert, reborn. Not to denigrate his fine work in the Mortal Kombat films.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the Legolas wig that's on his head. It's giving a bit much. Yeah. But whatever. I'm happy to have my dragons back. And I'm in an abusive relationship with HBO because I swore off this fucking show after last season of Game of Thrones. And here I am, looking like a dumbass.
Yep. Clown emoji. Insert your own, people. To Ira, what is your keep it this week?
My keep it this week goes to Harry Styles.
He has been around and discussing a lot of things relevant to us as queer people.
Yes. Irrelevant to him as a CIA agent who is unwilling to disclose anything about himself, but has a lot of opinions about things that really aren't his business.
It is giving Jodie Foster's Golden Globe speech. She's like, I am so proud to be in front of you and having been through a journey. Yeah.
I think that, first of all, Harry Styles was in an interview where he discussed his new movie, My Policeman.
Which apparently is really good.
Yeah. Look, I'm looking forward to seeing it. But he describes how gay sex in films is really just a lot of guys going at it. And in this film, it's more tender lovemaking between two men. And I want to know, first of all, are you watching Sean Cody? What movie is he talking about?
Yeah, I can't think of one movie he could be talking about.
Not even Call Me By Your Name, which should have been one of those films. It takes you feel like a lady in waiting, waiting for the sex to happen in that film.
Right. No. But,
Moonlight, and that, you don't even get to see it.
They pan away from it. Yeah, in Moonlight, they pan away from it. Brokeback Mountain has one moment of, famously kind of gritty sex, but that is very short-lived. And also, I can't really think of other movies he's talking about, God's Own Country? I don't know.
I think that, first of all, Harry Styles just be talking.
Sure.
He loves to talk. He just loves to be in an interview saying shit, which is funny in its own way. But also, here's the thing. I don't care if Harry is gay. I don't care if he's straight. I don't care if he's bi. I don't care if he's, Nick Jonas on gay magazine covers in 2015. Okay. Which is its own sexuality.
Right.
But if you're going to do this whole I don't want to talk about my sexuality and I don't want to disclose it, then stop having an opinion on gay film. It's weird behavior.
I also just think he's trying to speak authoritatively about something while speaking in vagaries, and it's just you're not saying anything. It's a lot of nothing.
Yeah. Also keep it to Rolling Stone UK for anointing him the new king of pop on
that is so funny.
Their cover, which is,
I'm sorry, he has a couple of singles.
Yeah. And it's not even me with this veneration for Michael Jackson either. It's one, a couple of singles, two, I've seen him live and he's not doing what any of the pop girls are doing. Okay, King of Pop denotes that you would be on par with Queens of Pop,
right.
With, he's not giving Beyonce, he's not giving Madonna on stage, he's not giving Janet, he's running around in brightly colored pantsuits, and that's about it. He's Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I was going to go the Poundstone route. Kamala Harris actually is a lot funnier. I would say about Madonna quickly. Did you know that the rumored name of her biopic is Little Sparrow? Which you can't just take Edith Piaf's name. What? Everybody's confused about their nicknames today.
There was a tweet where someone said that Harry Styles has been talked up by white people like he's basically James Brown.
Right. And he is mostly, somebody at the thrift shop who looks amazing.
He's a good singer, but he's about as a good singer as everyone else in the game right now. He's not I'm not even listening to a Harry Styles song being this is the vocals. This is giving me something. It's just pop music.
Yeah. As it was a pleasurable single. And by the way, still in the top five. I meant to say this when you brought up Nicki Minaj being number one. I guess just the Billboard chart doesn't move anymore. Kate Bush is still in the top five. God love the woman. We want this for Kate Bush. But and something else is still in the top five that's been around forever and ever and ever. Oh, Lizzo, About Damn Time. I remember that. I remember when About Damn Time was May,
It's about damn time for it to fall off the charts.
I'm about ready.
I don't understand how the fucking Billboard works at all, to be honest. Because I feel like there's the streaming numbers and then there's the radio numbers. And like, are the radio numbers catching up to the initial streams? It's who is still listening to this song constantly?
Right. No. Yeah. What math is involved in keeping these songs where they are or moving them around? Or why is Now Mariah now always at the top of the charts in Christmas, even though of course she is, because that's when people would be consuming that. So why wasn't that always the case? I need to stop this.
Anyway, I have one more surprise keep it, which goes to, unfortunately, I hate to do this as Leo season has just ended and we're under attack by Virgos.
Right.
But I must attack two Leos.
Oh, God.
Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, no. Two of our most productive Leos.
Do you know that they got married on a plantation this weekend?
No, not the Blake Lively situation.
Which is a replica of a plantation that his answer is like family once owned.
His own family. So he's,
yes.
So it's a historical celebration of what I'm going to assume is the worst part of his family history.
Listen, I find it extra wild because Henry Louis Gates Jr. had that show Finding Your Roots on PBS, if you recall.
Yes. Yes.
And do you also recall that Ben Affleck was in the second season of that show and the episode was pulled because when they did a search of Ben Affleck's roots, they found out that his family owned slaves and he did not want that to be on TV.
But what he was actually doing, he's like, this would be a pretty baller wedding location. He's like, I got to save this.
He got it pulled from TV and then apologized for it later. And then, what, like less than 10 years later, it's like, let's get married on a plantation. Who cares?
Also, that's such a weird instinct. Like, it would have been, I don't know, valuable in a way to be like, well, my own history contains this. You know, no one would be like, I blame you, Ben Affleck, for hundreds of years of degradation.
Listen, if Jesse on Saved by the Bell can confront the fact that her family used to own Lisa Turtles, I think that Ben Affleck can confront his family's history with slavery. I like truly am trying to remember that episode. I think it was Jesse trying to do things like, I bought you a Coca-Cola, Lisa.
Oh my God.
I'm paying for your lunch.
Wow. You rarely get episodes of TV about reparations.
And Lisa was the richest one in the show.
Right. But that does make it kind of funnier. Okay, it's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Saved by the Bell. Secretly brilliant.
I assure you it's not. The original. Woof. You watched it. I was like, what was wrong with me?
All right. Well, that's our show. So, shout out to John Boyega. And we'll see you next week. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Chris Lord. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III
and Louis Fertel.
Our editor is Charlotte Landis, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer.
Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nara Malkonian, and Delon Villanueva for our production support every week.
Kent State's reputation in the fashion industry is something you would hear from everyone when you're in New York City.
I will say we're quite well known for being hard workers.
Kent is really known for delivering well-rounded students.
Kent has one of the most prestigious fashion programs in the U.S. and also internationally ranked.
Our alumni are in every corner of the industry, every job position that you can imagine.
They all are ready. They have all the courses. They have everything under, you know, under their belt.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.